All right. Well, thank you, everyone, for joining us on today's call. It is February 10th. Welcome to the Paper Profits Mastermind Group Training Webinar. On the call with us is myself, Aaron Halderman. Kristen Bullen will be joining us, Travis Tolstrup and Philip Hay, and then we have a special guest expert who I'll introduce in just a minute here. Thanks, everyone, for being on the call. And it's a blistering, almost 90 degrees out here today, believe it or not, in February. Can you believe that? No complaints, though. It's just amazing and beautiful. So let's kick it off with the quote of the day. So this is the Jimmy Napier card deck that he has for some. It's called his famous little quotes that he has. Excessive talk costs you money. Ask questions like who, what, when, why, especially why. So I think that's a good exercise for us all to follow, especially when we're doing workouts and asset management piece, talking to vendors and service providers. You know, the person that typically is asking the questions, you know, is able to, you know, control the conversation more, at the same time get the information that you're looking to receive. So thank you, Jimmy, and great quote. As always, if you'll just type your questions in the question box, we'll be sure and get to those throughout the call, and make sure you just type those in there and hit send. If for whatever reason we skipped over you or didn't get it, just enter it in there again, and it'll drop back down into the feed. So we appreciate your participation. We get the most out of these calls when we get all of your participation and engaging. If you're using other email providers, again, some of you have still been having a little bit of trouble accessing the updates and things that we have going on. If you'll do us a favor and move our emails from the promotions, or first check the promotions folder and then move us over to primary, that'd be great. And it's different for different email providers. They have different promo or social and updates, but just if you'll drag it over into your primary inbox, they'll make sure you get all the updates. And if you're having any trouble, just drop us a line and we'll see if we can help you out. So we're going to cover some quick updates and announcements. We're updating our calendar of events. If you go to notetools.com/events, I'm going to cover the mastermind dates and the next few months of live workshop trainings. And then also we have a guest expert interview that we're doing today. And then we're have some training discuss some things on the reforms with Dodd-Frank, and we'll have some Q&A. If you're interested in coming to the summit next year, we will have a special members-only price. The link is up. John threw this slide in, so I'll have the dates here hopefully within the next 30 days or so. The biggest challenge is just finding a venue in San Diego in March. We are going to move away from the Hilton Resort and Spa, so we appreciate it. Being able to have the summit there the last 2 years, but we're going to test out another venue and look forward to that opportunity experience and see if we can get even a better room rate for you guys to attend. Here's the Paper Profits Mastermind Group updates that we have for 2016. Right now we're planning on having all these meetings in San Diego. So April 21st through the 22nd will be the first one. The next one will be July 14th through the 15th. And the following that will be November 10th through 11th. So please put those in your calendar, and hopefully you can make it out to those. We highly recommend at least attending two of the three for your benefit. There'll be two full days, and we'll have the exact location hotel for you shortly as well. Our next upcoming workshops, March 11th and 12th, is the next one in Las Vegas. If you're interested in coming to that, you can check out the details at notetools.com/March workshop. John and I will send out a link for you to RSVP, so you can just let us know. We need that for headcount, for food, for, you know, production materials and all that. Make sure we have everything ordered and ready to go for that. The next two will be April 7 and 8 in San Diego, followed by May 12 and 13 in San Diego. So we look forward to having you, if you can attend those and receive additional training. Repetition is a great law of learning, and so we encourage you to come out and support and participate in those and meet, network with other group members, and then meet, network with other people that are interested in getting into the business and attending a workshop with us for the first time. The one in Las Vegas.
Hey, real quick, Aaron.
Yep, go ahead. Yep. Hey, real quick, just for those people on those mastermind, the three live in-person meeting dates, if you guys can let us know, we've tried to talk to several of you. Some of you have let us know about some dates that are just are not good. You have other commitments. So let us know, because we want to really firm those up. Those are what we have on there as tentative dates, and we want to run with those. But if there's, we obviously want maximum, capacity at those events, because they're going to be transformational 2 days of masterminding. So just let us know, reach out to us as soon as possible, and we'll be doing a little bit of the same to you guys.
Yes, great feedback on that. We really, this right now works really good with our schedules, and we want to accommodate as much as possible to, like Travis said, to make sure that we have great attendance. So just drop us a line, the sooner the better. We'll also send out an email update as well, concluding the call, so it stays fresh in your mind in case you forget. Okay, the referral program, as always, if you're interested in that, just go sign up at notetools.com/partner. We'd be happy to help you out and to support that. We love growing, you know, through referrals and creating a great group and community. Helps foster that when you do that. We have assets. We sent out the REOs last Friday. If you didn't get those for whatever reason, just drop me a line. I'll be happy to get those over to you. If you have some first that you're interested in, please contact Travis on that. He's still working on some performing assets he has there. As far as our seconds go, we'll be releasing those to PPMG members this Friday. So we're excited to get those out to you. And what will be provided will be the data tape and the credit files and a reserve price, at which point we'll have a deadline with a trade schedule for you to meet as far as when the bids are due, when you need to sign an LSA, do the funds, you know, get access to the collateral files for further review after your bid, and go through that. So we're excited to get those out to you this Friday. If you haven't signed the NDAs, most of you already have, but just an update there, just please go and make sure that we have an NDA and proof of funds on file for you. Would be a great help as far as that goes. So what I want, I'm pleased to announce our featured guest expert and speaker on today's training call, Mr. David Roberts. He's based out in Texas. Some of you may have had the opportunity to meet and hear him at our Note Investor Summit Live just a few weeks ago. If you missed it, I've asked him to go do a bigger drill down today on some of the programs that he has specifically for non-performing notes, REOs, and rentals. So there is a brochure. Some of you may have already received it and accessed that in the email that went out. If not, we'll make sure you get that. But David sent us a brochure with additional details. We'd be happy to send over as well. And, of course, his website at renters-select.com. So, David, are you on the call? Say hi to us. Welcome.
Hello, Aaron. How are you doing today?
Well, great. How's Texas going? How's that treating us?
Oh, it's great down here. I mean, I hope everybody can understand that my accent is not transplanted New Jersey. I am actually a native Texan. And if you need a translation into English, I think Aaron can provide that later.
I would do my best. I spent 18 years in Dallas myself, so you know, but I haven't been home since. Just kept moving further west. So a little bit of the Texan has been slapped out of me. But Travis, I think, can attest when I go back home or, you know, get around my fellow Texans, and it all mysteriously comes right back. So it's fun. But welcome. Thanks for joining us so much. We're excited for you being on the call and drilling down your program and the offerings and how it can help protect our investments as note investors and as real estate investors and really offer this coverage. It's really important that really it hasn't been made sense to the smaller investor, you know, people with maybe that are only managing, let's say, you know, less than 50 assets, that it really made sense for their portfolio. So they kind of cut corners or, you know, look for other options or, you know, maybe not do anything, which could be really costly and quite a mistake. So what I wanted to do is turn the time over to you to cover these areas, you know, a little bit about your company, since most of us are already pretty acquainted with that,
and just really drill down in how people can get started with you, what their next steps would be for contacting you and accessing your programs, and what they would, what that looks like. So please take us away.
Okay, thank you. Well, first of all, I've been in this space as a insurance broker for over 20 years, and my company is now a wholly owned subsidiary of U.S. Risk, which is the seventh largest wholesale insurance brokerage in the world. We have 17 offices in the U.S., London, Geneva, and Dubai. And I have been associated with this group for just over a year now, but I've been in the note investor space and have worked in subprime my entire career. And basically, after attending and having a booth at your summit a few weeks ago in San Diego, I got to meet a lot of the investors there, and it's basically the same story in this group as with some other groups in the note space that I work with, in that a lot of the investors are not aware of the type of programs that a company like mine can offer that are a seamless transition from acquiring the asset or acquiring the note all the way through the business model to either executing your strategy of holding these as rental properties or fixing and flipping or selling on a contract for deed or land contract. And with that, I'd like to start with the non-performing note buyer who acquires this note, and then there's an underlying asset, a real estate asset, that they normally don't know the status of whether the property is insured. If you heard me at the seminar, I can I'll repeat myself and say that if the borrower is not making the payments on his mortgage, it's almost 100% likely that he's not making the payments on his insurance. But because you're not aware of that status, you can write a forced place policy on the collateral as the note holder. You have an insurable interest. And we can write that coverage. It's not underwritten. We don't care what the condition is. We're not asking questions, but at a little higher rate. But you can write that and then keep that in place until you find out the status of the coverage, whether there is other coverage. If there is other coverage, which would be an all-time miracle, then you can cancel our policy pro rata. You will only pay for coverage for the time that you had coverage in effect. So if you write it for 3 months and cancel it, you only pay for 3 months of the premium. Now, that's for a non-performing note, an asset that you have no idea what the status is. And the reason this program works so well is that coverage is bound the day you request it and is in effect until you cancel it. So you can use it. It's immediate coverage, and it's effective for as long as you need it. What I suggest is as you move through the cycle and you either foreclose or make some type of determination what to do with the asset, and this can be multiple channels. You can write a new note, do a new contract, modify the loan. You may foreclose. You may find out the property's vacant and you need to do some rehab. At any one of these steps, we can move you to a product that is designed for the stage that you're at with the investment. And by that, I mean, if you buy a property and you start the rehabilitation process and it's vacant, and you want to get a better rate than the forced place rate, we have a DP1. It's a dwelling protector that we can write that property on. We can write up to 25 properties at a time per policy to streamline the administration of your insurance. And then as you remodel the property or rent the property or sell it, we can move you to a DP3, which is a more enhanced coverage designed for occupied properties. And that will take you through the business cycle of acquiring these assets. I talk to a lot of investors that have 5 properties, 10 properties, 15 properties, and they have 15 different insurance policies for these properties. I can put all of these on one policy, regardless of which stage it's at, whether it's forced place, a DP1 or a DP3. And then to go into the next stage, if you sell the property on a contractor deed, land contract, modify their existing loan, whatever it may be, we have a voluntary product that you can get your borrower to buy to cover the property, and we monitor that process. So if they ever cancel or something adverse happens with that, we let you know, where we can go back with a forced place policy. Or if you're turning these properties into rentals and we put you into a long-term DP3 type coverage on the assets, we can write a tenant liability program so that the majority of the damage that is caused to these units will be covered under a separate policy that the tenant pays for. The type of program you utilize through us really depends on what your business model is, what type of assets you're acquiring, whether it's notes, whether it's REOs, and then what your exit strategy is. Are you buying and holding and renting? Are you selling these on a contract for deed, et cetera? Go ahead.
Yep, go ahead. Well, I was just going to go ahead. Go ahead.
Well, my main point is my team has an extensive long-term background in this space. So we sit down and basically get the information on what the investor is trying to accomplish, and we'll put the program in place that best fits their needs.
Oh, perfect. That was actually going to be my comment, just restating back. So what I'm hearing you say is that, you know, each investor has typically a different business model or a unique business model to them. And so what you're willing to do, you know, as a unique opportunity and value add for your group is, you know, we come to you as an investor. We're going to communicate back what we're trying to accomplish. And then you're going to, you know, basically create something that will meet our needs, you know, both on the front end and on the back end. And as we move along the process from default or distress to, you know, an actual paying asset again, whether it, you know, is a note created or a land contract or, a rental property or whatever. Is that what I'm hearing?
Yes, exactly. And the advantage with working with someone like me, as opposed to your local agent, is I can do this nationwide. So if you have properties spread out geographically, you know, over multiple states, in multiple cities, we can make this coverage seamless for you, and you're not having to manage multiple policies or dealing with multiple agents. And specifically in this space, what we've discovered is that when you come in and compare apples to apples with our policy compared to what you're buying from your local State Farm or Allstate or Farmers agent, is on any one individual risk, we may be higher or lower on our premium by a few dollars. But when you consider the fact that our coverage is pro rata across the board, and that means you only pay for the amount of time you use the coverage. And I talked to several of your investors at the summit who they got a rate that was $30 or $40 less per year than what I was quoting them. But then when they canceled the policy 6 months into the term, they found out they didn't get any refund because the Allstate or State Farm policy basically short rates them and accelerates the earned premium. and you don't get a refund. You pay for a year that you use for 6 months. And you also
that's key. That's a very key point.
Well, and then you got to be very careful on coverage, because if you don't have the right policy in place to cover the asset at the stage the asset is at in your business model, if it's vacant, for example, and you've written your coverage with an Allstate or a State Farm, what you're going to find out is they only have a 30 or 60 day coverage window on vacant properties. And if the property is vacant when you acquire it, and that's not disclosed on the policy, on the application, there's a good chance that they're going to deny any claim just because of the fact it wasn't disclosed. There's lots of little gotchas in the insurance business that you've got to be very careful, and you've got to partner with somebody that's not just looking to get a little premium out of you, but wants to build a business with you and help you with your model.
Well, you make a lot of interesting points. So, you know, it's great. Hopefully you guys find a lot of value in this. You know, when we ask somebody to come on and go more in depth and, you know, looking at their business model and how they can help our business model, and you know, I love that word you just used on, they got a lot of little gotchas. So those gotchas can be really big gotchas when you stack a bunch of little ones on top of each other, right?
Absolutely. Just one example that's real common is on the other policies in the market you get from your local agent, they have very limited coverage, and sometimes they exclude coverage for theft, vandalism, and malicious mischief. And the top three incidents of claim in this arena, in this niche of the business, is theft, vandalism, and malicious mischief. So it really doesn't make sense to buy a cheap policy that doesn't have the coverage that you actually need, and no one's explaining that to you until you submit a claim, and then you discover you have no coverage, or you have very limited coverage.
Yeah. Well, I threw a couple of slides, since you're just calling in with us today, David, but I threw up the Renter Select package policy, and this was in the brochure that you sent over that we sent out to each of you in the email. If you didn't get it, just let us know, and we'll send it. You can download it. But it covers, you know, the Renter Select policy, the tracking program you provide, in your forced place program. Is there anything specific that you would like to mention or cover in those programs that you think would be a value add to the group that's maybe not necessarily listed on in the brochure?
Well, the Renter Select policy is your renter's coverage, where you rent the house and you require that the tenant have liability coverage minimum. And this is the policy that the tenant purchases, and it protects the tenant's interest, in that it has content coverage, additional living expenses, theft coverage, a lot of bells and whistles, and it's a barometer of what kind of tenant you have, because tenants that purchase this tend to make their payments on time at a much higher frequency. They tend to have some property and some assets that they want to insure, which usually means they maintain the premises to a higher degree. But for the owner investor that's buying these properties and turning them into rentals, the Renter Select package policy is basically a free layer of coverage that anyone leasing property should require their tenants to have their own coverage. And in the event that the house is damaged due to the tenant's negligence or liability, this policy is the first dollar loss payee for that, which allows the dwelling coverage that the owner has to actually get better rates. So it's a win-win for an investor. And in the event, if you require this coverage and the tenant doesn't provide it, we do have a blanket tenant liability program that is not in the brochure that will run you about $10 a month to cover the tenant's liability issues. And you can actually, if you require that they have coverage as a condition of the lease, you can pass on this cost to the tenant if they don't provide proof of their own coverage.
Beautiful. So walk us through the tracking program and the forced place program.
Tracking is done basically if you're requiring that your tenant, or in the case of a land contract or contract for deed, your borrower, if you require them to have insurance, whether it's a renter select on a rental or a homeowner's policy on a borrower, we can track that requirement on your behalf to make sure the tenant and or borrower stays in compliance. It's not really something that you need unless you're probably in that 50 to 100 unit ownership. But, anything smaller than that, it's the tracking fee, the minimum fees we would charge are a little bit prohibitive. And we can show you how to track that on your own to maintain compliance. There's just a few things you need to have done. You need to be on the mortgagee clause on a homeowner's policy. You need to be on the renter select policy as the landlord, so that you're notified of any adverse action that on the policy, if it's canceled, non-renewed, etc. But that's a function that is just a compliance tool to make sure your borrower and or tenant maintains their coverage. And then
okay.
Forced place, as I alluded to earlier, forced place is the product that you use when your borrower or your tenant does not comply with their requirement to maintain insurance. And it's also used on acquisitions of REOs and acquisitions of non-performing notes when you don't know the status of the insurance, you don't know if there's coverage, and you need coverage immediately so that there's not a question. And until you work through the process of finding out if there is other coverage, you know you're covered, you force place the coverage, and then if there was other coverage, you cancel the force place policy, you actually get your money back, for the any period of time that there was other coverage. But it gives you a very quick way to protect the asset without having to go through a lot of underwriting or questions, and it's instant issue. You come in the system, you enter the property address and the value, you buy in coverage that minute.
Beautiful. Now, what other, maybe tips or strategies would be of benefit to discuss with the group today? We got a lot of great programs you've discussed. What other things should we be looking for as note investors and as, REO buyers and, building our rental portfolios? Anything else that you'd like to comment or add to?
I've pretty much covered it all, Aaron, but, I would just, I would caution the investors in this space that, you truly get what you pay for, and you really have to be careful and compare on an apples to apples basis the coverage from an agent that really does not specialize in this space and is not aware of the fact that a lot of these are low value dwellings, that a lot of these properties have been vacant for a period of time, and there's a lot of agents out there that will go ahead and take your premium, and then at the time the claim comes up, be happy to tell you that there is no coverage because the property didn't qualify, or now we have to go inspect the property, and we're canceling it, and you're losing 30 to 60 to 90 days of the premium that they're going to keep. You really, the key in this business just like everything else in your due diligence and the background check and the work you do to acquire these assets, do the same thing with your insurance agent. Whether it's me, whether it's someone else, make sure they're aware of what you're trying to do and what type of assets and notes you're acquiring. Make sure they're aware that you hold these properties in an LLC, and you need to make sure that it's okay to write the coverage. There's a lot of carriers that will not write as an LLC. They will only write as an individual, and it'll just cause you headaches in the long run. So
these are all great tips and strategies, David. Thank you so much. I want to be respectful of your time, but if you wouldn't mind maybe hanging out with us for just another minute, if we got any questions that come through, why don't you guys type in any questions that you have for David here now, and we'll start looking through those. So I have a couple big takeaways. One is, you know, you want to work with somebody who specializes being in this industry and our space. David's a 20-year veteran. He's not a spring chicken in this space, and he's got a lot of years of experience, seen a lot of investors make different mistakes, and you really want to align yourselves with different service providers that can help you to grow your business. So that was a big takeaway. The other takeaway was being able to write these policies so, you know, it covers the whole blanket and spectrum of it versus having all these, you know, dinky little individual policies that can really, you know, become a headache to manage all these. So, you know, a lot of great takeaways and golden nuggets. Hopefully you guys appreciate that. So do we have any questions? If not, we'll move into the training, and we'll thank David. And if you have any, David, tell us how people can get a hold of you, and if they're interested in your services and consulting with you on their portfolios, what is the best way to reach you?
The best way, Aaron, is through my email, and that's droberts@lloyd-ins.com.
Wonderful, and we'll send that out to you guys so you can drop David a line and see how he can help get you started on some of your needs there. So, David, I won't take any more of your time. Thanks so much for being on the call today. Really appreciate it, and thanks for dropping some great knowledge with us. You've been always a gentleman.
I appreciate it, Aaron. And anytime you need any assistance with these calls or at the seminars, just let me know.
Our pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thanks, guys.
Okay. Bye. Well, so that concludes our guest expert training today. Now we're going to move on to our in-house training with Mrs. Kristen Bowen and Mr. Philip Pei. We're going to go over the Dodd-Frank Reform Act and understanding that in a little bit detail, in further detail on some of the changes that have taken place. Kristen and Philip, say hi to us. Make sure we can hear you good. Everything sounds good.
Hello.
We're all here.
Awesome. Awesome, awesome. Well, hopefully you guys, I got a lot out of that call. Some great tips and strategies there. Some stuff I knew, other stuff that was newer to me. It's always great to just learn from other industry experts, you know.
Definitely. And I just wanted to, before we jump into this Dodd-Frank thing, I want to make sure everybody understands we are not dispensing any kind of legal advice. This is an overview for folks who may not be familiar with anything beyond the words Dodd-Frank. It's something that people hear about commonly in this industry, but as Kristen talks about some of the scenarios where this applies, I think it'll open some eyes as to the risks that people take and they don't understand that they're taking as it relates to this legislation. And so this is going to be something that is very, very valuable, and unfortunately is something that is not paid close enough attention to in our market. It's very prominent on the origination level in some of the big players, but now that we're in the secondary and other mezzanine markets, it's something that is commonly overlooked. So that's why we thought it would be
sure.
Important to bring it up today.
Well, thank you so much. Yeah, we are not attorneys. We are not accountants, CPAs. Please, you know, we do not offer any legal or tax advice. Consult with your counsel and special experts for that. Philip, I'm going to hand the controls over to you. Are you ready to share over your screen?
Sure. Sure.
Okay,
well,
I'm gonna
I didn't know we were doing that, so hang on.
Okay. Just let me know when you're ready.
All right. Bear with me just a moment.
No, you're fine. That's great.
Can you hear me okay?
Yep, go ahead.
Hey,
yeah,
you know,
I hear you wonderful.
Before we get started and we kind of dive into the actual Reform Act, and I just wanted to, we have briefly talked about Dodd-Frank certificates. So in the past, in the workout package, in the letter campaign, in borrower connection, shock and awe, there's a lot of different ways that we have referred to it in the past. Dodd-Frank cert is an actual disclosure that's signed by every borrower, and if they were convicted of a felony, financial crime, larceny, tax evasion, anything of that nature, they would be not eligible for that government product, meaning HAPA, HAMP, HARP, the hardest hit funds. So that just kind of like, while we're getting the slides ready to go, I know that people have seen us talk or heard us talk about Dodd-Frank certificate, and this is kind of just a piggyback, and this is the background and the overview and the facts that go into the understanding and how important it is and critical into the as we go into the servicing piece.
Wonderful.
So we've kind of given you some background, but this is a deep dive to understand where it came from and the why. It was the Dodd-Frank Reform Act was intended for a Consumer Protection Act back in July 21st, 2010. It was passed as a response to the Great Recession, and it brought significant changes and regulations into the United States so that followed by the Great Depression. So it made many changes in the American financial environment that affected all of the financial regulatory agencies and almost every part of the nation's financial services industry. So with other major financial reforms, there was a variety of critics of attack the law, some arguing that it was not enough to prevent another financial crisis or creating more of those bailouts. So a lot of argument went back and forth prior to, and that's where they came to the go ahead and go to the next slide. Okay. So the administration, the Obama administration back in June of 2009 is who actually they initially proposed it, and when it went to the White House, several bills were sent to Congress, and a version of the legislation was introduced to the House back in 2009 on December 2nd. Then there was revisions introduced to the House of Representatives, and then the Financial Services Committee Chairman, Barney Frank, and then by a former chairman of Chris Dodd, hence that's how they got the title of the Reform Act. So the Secretary of the Housing Urban to ensure that they wanted to protect future tenants at risk, anything that impacted a multifamily scenario of five or more unit properties. So they coordinated the program and development with the Secretary of the Treasurer, the FDIC, the Fed, the Federal Housing Finance agencies, and all the other federal government agencies deemed it appropriate. So now we're getting into here's some bullets that actually include some of the, by creating sustainable financing of such properties, it would be as far as the following bullets that you see, the rental income generated by such properties, the preservation of adequate operating reserves, maintaining the current level of federal, state, and city funds for rehabilitation, and facilitating the transfer of such properties when appropriate and with the agreement of owners. So, Philip, do you have any, as I'm going through these slides, I don't want to be so dry. I want, sometimes these facts can be extremely dry, so I just wanted you to make sure you chime in and let me know you know, how it, this is, has impacted the servicing side, and then I can speak to the underwriting side as we go through it.
I'll be happy to do that. You know, as it talks about, or as it relates to servicing, there was a period when this very first came out that nobody really understood the criteria, and so there was a huge gap in the pipeline where, because nobody knew what to do, and because the ramifications of getting it wrong were so significant, everybody just stopped doing it. Everybody kind of went into a holding pattern. There were no modifications. There were no foreclosures. There were no REO sales. There was just this huge stop in the pipeline. This big gap was created, and it only over the last little bit has started to loosen up a little bit, where people understand truly how to write a mod and what it means. And there's starting to be not necessarily what we'd call case law, but there's starting to be examples where people have done things, and you know, the legislators have had a chance to review what those actions were and make a determination on how they conformed to the intention of the law and the letter of the law, so that people can start kind of mirroring those activities. And so it's just now starting to get its momentum and take off on as it was originally intended to do.
And I can speak, just because I actually worked for a loan servicer at the time that this all rolled out, and it was very, very, very clear that there was a huge bottleneck in all companies across the board in the industry. All servicers had a giant bottleneck in default back in about, what would you say, 2007?
Yeah. Well, and it lasted quite a long time, too, because this wasn't the only issue, if you remember, at the time. But
yeah, right. And HAMP, you know, the Home Affordable Modification Program and Obama's, you know, all of that didn't roll out until 2009. So there was a good 24 to 36 months of chaos before there was any regs in place.
Yep.
So this brings me to the slide that we're looking at right here. Now, previously, in 2009, the Treasury created the Home Affordable Modification Program that was created to help eligible homeowners with loan modifications and to get the economy back into a producing pro forma status, so to speak. So this section of the Dodd-Frank Reform Act impacts the mortgage servicer participating in the program who denies a remodification request to provide the borrower with that data and the use. So denial letters, you know, so that's why critical it is, if you're declining some type of request from a homeowner, make sure you're sending out your denial letters. That's impacted from this Reform Act. Providing a reason why you're reasoning, your decisioning, use as how you used in the MPV analysis, your net present value. The Secretary of the Treasury also directed to establish a web-based site that explains how you arrive to the actual net profit value calculations. Everybody is familiar with the Home Affordable Act. If you have any additional questions on that, feel free to hit me up via the hotline. I'm more than happy to assist you with that. Okay. All right, so Subtitle C of the Reform Act this impacts the high-cost mortgages, as well as reverse mortgages are sometimes referred to as certain home mortgage transaction. In the Fed's Reg Z Act, the regulation used to implement various sections of the Truth in Lending Act, and this encompassed the high-cost mortgage as redefined as consumer credit transaction that's secured by the consumer's principal dwelling. So reverse mortgages in the past are very different from reverse mortgages in current day. So there are some exclusions. So you always want to look at your CFPB or ask your attorneys to ensure that you're following all of the state guidelines. These are just some examples. Credit transactions secured by consumers' principal dwelling an interest rate of 6.5 or more. Subordinated second mortgages, if secured by principal dwelling and interest rate 8.5 or more than prime rate for comparable transactions. Points and fees for MI, mortgage insurance, or known as PMI, if the transaction is less than $20,000, total points and fees greater than 8% or $1,000, greater than $20,000, total points and fees greater than 6%, and under certain conditions, if the fees and points may be collected more than 36 months after the loan is executed. So a lot of this information ties into loan originations and creating new paper, but it is our responsibility being in this industry to be educated and understand all sides.
I agree, and we've got scenarios where folks are buying loans and they are sometimes are modifying and sometimes they're creating entirely new notes, and understand that the point of a borrower causing you heartache over something like this, even if it doesn't necessarily apply to you in your market, it's not worth taking the risk of trying to create an out-of-the-box solution if it's easier to just write a note that's conforming to this. And I don't know if I said that the way I intended. But you understand what I'm saying, Kristen, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Don't take the chance.
Yeah, exactly. Why take the risk? If you could just go back one. Yeah, some those three bullets down there at the bottom, I don't want you guys to get confused with disallowing balloon payments and prepayment penalties and banning the practice of just encouraging. I don't know if you guys, again, I only can speak to this because I was boots on the ground inside the bank. And I can't tell you how many of my employees were encouraging folks to just not pay their mortgage so that it made the mod sweeter. So now they're banned from that practice of encouraging people to default because imminent default terms are different than default terms and guidelines. So they put some controls around this, but I don't want you guys to be confused with disallowing balloon payments for deferred principal balances or deferring part of their arrearages. That languaging is different. Right, Philip?
Correct.
Okay. So the next section is, do we have any questions so far? Or is this going too fast? Are we all good? I don't see any questions in the question box so far.
We're good.
Okay. All right, and you know, like some of this information is a little bit overwhelming and maybe going too fast, but it is really critical in understanding if you're going to be a note investor and to, you know, just be educated so that you can educate your borrowers to benefit all parties involved. So
yeah, a couple comments on that. You know, so we had some really good presentations from Mike Griffith over the past few years on Dodd-Frank. We've had some specialty workshops from other attorneys that have gone into Dodd-Frank. We did one last year with Jim Eckley, who's an attorney that specializes in, you know, compliance, Dodd-Frank, and that was recorded, and that's posted in the members area. So we have lots of resources, you know, that we can go back and review. It is important to understand. Yes, it's a lot of information, but they are important pieces. So you're not making some costly mistakes along the road. So anyways, good points. Very good.
Okay, good. And then back in 1974, the Real Estate Settlement Procedures Act rolled out, and the subtitle E is mortgage servicing, and the concerns, the rules concerning escrow and settlement procedures is this area right here, and that in connection with a residential mortgage, there should be an established escrow or impound account set up for the payment of taxes and hazard insurance. Also know that any of your borrowers trying to go through a modification on their first mortgage, and I'm speaking to those folks that have majority seconds on those first mortgages that are going through that modification process, well, if they're going to try to apply for a HAMP modification, then an escrow account is a requirement. It has to be set up. So regardless of when they borrowed the money, if they paid their own property taxes and insurance, well, if they're modifying, they're going to be required to set up an escrow account. Let's just say that that HAMP modification ends up being denied, and then they do modify it, but under a standard bank-owned product, those escrows will be removed back out of that modification. So just be very cautious and aware that when you're looking at your overall spread of how much the first mortgage is, make sure your PITI is correct. And principal, interest, taxes, and insurance, make sure that your overall number at the end of the day is correct so that you're calculating a correct spread for your exit strategy. Okay, so this is just talking more of if an escrow impound or a trust account is not established or the consumer chooses to close the account, the servicer shall provide a timely and clear written disclosure to the consumer. That is just disclosing that it's the responsibility of the consumer, and implications for the consumer in the absence of such account. And that's where we kind of lead into the gentleman, Mr. Roberts, was speaking of force-placed insurance, and that's kind of what happens once, if you don't have an escrow or an impound account with the bank, you fall delinquent, don't pay your property taxes and insurance, well, the bank's going to come behind and force-place those insurances. So this slide right here, I just wanted to make sure that all of my information that I disclose and share with you guys is all facts. I don't make this stuff up. It's all facts, and that's the links just to support my resources so that you guys know and understand. And if you wanted some more additional information or an actual PDF of those guidelines and rules, then you can go to the CFPB. I included a link here if you all you really have to do is Google. You can find anything and everything that you want to know. Make sure that if you have a majority of seconds, there are several exclusions for the ability to repay, which we're going to kind of talk off just freestyle here with me and Philip. But the ability to repay, there are some exclusions when you're working seconds, but it's always a good idea to know and understand your borrower's repayment capacity and not setting up anybody for failure, because at the end of the day, it's you that's going to cost more money because you're going to have to reinitiate foreclosure. So, Philip, I just wanted to ask you a couple questions, like the ability to repay and then the importance of knowing your borrower.
Okay.
And then when we're talking about ability to repay, we're underwriting, there's always a portion of underwriter, you know, discretion and justification, and you know, just if you can justify that your decision is sound for all parties involved, then I wouldn't be really worried or concerned about their ability to repay. Would you agree, or do you have anything to add to that?
No, I do. I think that the mod process is definitely undergoing, you know, more scrutiny. And as an underwriter, you know, your job is to protect first the borrower and then you, right, as the lender. And so you want to make sure that you're documenting your research, that you're documenting your borrower's responses, that they're providing as much evidence as possible of, you know, the facts as they're presenting them to you, proof of their income, proof of their savings, proof of their sources of the income that they're using to help cure the default. You know, most importantly, what they're able to do going forward. You know, hardships by nature are temporary, and so at some point the underwriter has to make a judgment call as to whether or not the hardship has ended or if the hardship is going to be ongoing. And being able to rely on your experience and rely on your communication with the borrower and relying on your documentation, that's, you know, at the end of the underwriting period, you've got to make a call that says, yes, I'm comfortable with this. I know that they can repay, or no. And you've got to be able to stand up for either of those decisions.
Now, I saw a question come through that if we are selling homes at, say, 12% interest on a contract for deed, do we need to have those buyers go to a counselor before closing? So are you generating new paper, John? Just type that in. The reason why is if it is a new paper, then it is highly recommended that you have an MLO involved. Was Travis still on, or did anybody?
Oh, I'm here.
Did you have anything to add to that part? Just because of the MLO piece, his question was selling homes on a contract for deed. Is there any caveats that you're aware of?
Well, that's a whole additional training call that we will be having here shortly, because it's an area where we're expanding. And the good news is we'll have people that are coaching us through the process, you know, just lay that out for everybody here. That I'm assuming there's other interests as well in some area. So, but yeah, there's just, you got to watch out for quite a few different things and as you create that paper. So stay tuned.
Yes, he is creating new paper, so that would fall into a little bit different of a categories than just straight loan mods and non-performing seconds.
Awesome. Do we have any other questions or comments?
I've been watching the comment section, and I don't see the question that he asked that for us, so I want to make sure that we got that answered. Is there anything else?
So a couple comments. One is our next training webinar will be on the 24th of this month, and then moving into March, we're going to move to Tuesdays. We'll send out an update for those that weren't able to join us on today's call. The primary reason we're going to still maintain the same time at 1:30 Pacific. The primary reason is a lot of people travel and have other things where Wednesdays, you know, is a travel day, and we have a lot of events and conferences coming up too. So we figured, you know, moving it to a Tuesday format would benefit most people, as we asked you as well. So we will do that. Hopefully you guys have got a lot of great value. I mean, we're always trying to, you know, please give us feedback, give us other topics. I mean, we're happy to always give information and do stuff and come up with things and, you know, serve you guys. But, you know, please let us know, and we'd be happy if there's some specific you want us to cover or go over more depth, and we'll make it happen. So if we don't have any other questions, we'll just go ahead and end, since we're just a few minutes past the hour. Hey, thanks everyone for being on the call. Thanks, Travis. Thanks, Kristen. Thanks, Philip, as always. And thank David Roberts again for joining us and dropping some great knowledge on us. So we'll see you guys here in a few weeks. Bye now.